there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 288. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com, strolling over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter, the handle is thisshowisogay, and of course, go to the Facebook, type in thisshowisogay, like us, because we sure as heck like you, feeling oh-so-renewed after a few weeks off. We will talk later in the show about my very gay trip to Chicago, But first, you know, we don't have that many traditions here on This Show Is So Gay. We just like to feature as many folks as we can doing really inspiring things with their voice. That said, there is one tradition that we freaking love, and it's our Christmas episode, because if it's Christmas on This Show Is So Gay, that means Netta is here. Netta Ulaby reports on arts, entertainment, and cultural trends for NPR's Arts Desk. She has profiled breakout artists such as Ellen Page and Skylar Grey and featured Society's premier tastemakers, ranging from super producer Timberland to James Seamus, CEO of Focus Features. Her stories have included a series on women record producers to a look at the legacy of gay activist Harvey Milk. I love that one. Netta has earned multiple fellowships at the Getty Arts Journalism Program at USC Annenberg, as well as a fellowship at the Knight Center for Specialized Journalism to study youth culture. In addition, Netta's weekly podcast of NPR's Best Art Stories, Culturetopia, won a Gracie Award from the Alliance for Women in Media Foundation. I'm telling you, one of my favorite episodes of the year with one of my favorite people. Netta, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's especially nice. Your Christmas tradition, I mean, sometimes I feel like mistletoe gone bad, you know, like it's been hanging around.
It's a resume builder. It's a resume builder. I would put on there that you are a gay Jew's Christmas tradition.
Oh, that is exactly what this little Muslim Christian might be and always wanted to be.
I do it. Time number 6 on This Show Is So Gay. Of course, how does it feel?
Oh, my goodness. I'm fanning myself. Can you hear the fanning?
Well, we have so much to discuss. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we start with you as we always start with you because it's so important to go there. Netta, what does radio mean to you?
Oh, it means unicorns and rainbows, and it means dancing, happy children and kittens. What does radio mean to me? It's such a crazy question, Ken, because, you know, we're in this multi-platform age,
yeah,
right, where it's what it means is it's a platform that I love, that I grew up listening to. And, you know, you live in the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. And when I was a little kid, radio was just like this incredible gateway to the entire world, like NPR in particular. And it was also a gateway into finding kinds of music and points of view that you wouldn't find otherwise, because you would just blip along the channel. You wouldn't even blip, you know, you turned a dial.
Yeah.
And that is dead. You know, nobody does that anymore. You know, I would, when I was a little kid, my parents gave me a clock radio, and I'm sure everyone has a version of the story, and I turned it until I heard something I really liked, and it was the Easy Listening station.
Seven.
And I listened to Easy Listening for like the next 5 years. You know, so maybe it's good that radio's coming, you know, radio's age is fading.
I love it. I love it. It's where you first heard Pete Seeger, and then the myth was born.
Pete Seeger was not an Easy Listening. It was like orchestral, you know, adaptations of, you know, musicals, because I was, you know, a gay affiliated little kid even from the beginning. But yeah, so radio, it's growing, it's evolving, it's trying to do those things.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it's doing, but we're pushing for it.
We're pushing for it. What about you? What would you say that you are setting out to do with your work on NPR?
Well, what am I setting out to do? I try with every single story that I do to do something surprising.
Nice.
That's the challenge. What can I do that people won't expect?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's just an unexpected piece of sound, or maybe it's a turn of, well, it's not a turn of phrase usually, but it's a point of view maybe. You know, maybe it's just a thought that when you leave this piece, you'll think, huh, I never thought about this like that before. Or, you know, and that's it.
There you go. And we're going to talk about so many of your 2014 pieces on this episode. But for folks who do not follow you on Facebook, you do have some very funny status updates. Do you have a sense that you have very funny status updates?
I do can try not to waste people's time.
This
you're scaring me with just like all of these pieces. Like it's like this is your life, and it's some. I'm going to come back next year, and you're going to have like all of my ex-girlfriends lined up. You're going to be like.
Speaking of, no, I don't have that. I don't. Calling in from Chicago, we have no. I don't.
No, not her.
Oh, man, 2015 is going to be awesome. But this was my favorite one, and there are so many, and it was more of a recent one, but I'm going to ask you the question that was posed to you in the status update. I love this one. Netta wrote, I was interviewed this morning by some students who are now attending my old high school. Their first question, do you remember anything about high school?
You know, when a young kid asks you that question, you really have to work to not be insulted, you know, to have your immediate response not be like vicious defensiveness. Like, screw you.
I love it.
How old do you think I am? I mean, so, like, you turn into Betty Davis all of a sudden, right? But, yeah, and you think of yourself, you know, with my job, you're like, oh, I'm a seasoned interviewer. I can handle anything that these children will throw at me, and then they destroy you with their very first question.
Already like, on the defense.
Right. I was done at that point. I was putty in their hands.
I love it. Well, you've been at NPR, I don't know if you know this, for 14 years.
Is that right? So I was only 14 when I started?
It's amazing, right? No, it was like right post bat mitzvah, and you went straight to work. It was amazing.
Incredible, especially that a Muslim kid had a bat mitzvah.
It was a much ballyhooed bat mitzvah. Trust me, the press is still out there.
Yeah, I don't remember it, but I don't remember high school either.
There you go. Do you just feel like NPR is your home? Can you even picture yourself someplace else?
It's a flattering question. You know, to be honest, I think that anybody who works in media and thinks that they will be there for the rest of their life is delusional.
Okay.
You know, media platforms are scary places to be, and I do think of it as my home, but it is a home that could be a very different kind of place. In a few years who knows? I mean, nobody, I think that most people listening to the show are rooting hard for NPR.
Yeah.
But, you know, we live in unstable times.
I'm rooting for NPR. And I will thank you, by the way. I've not had the opportunity to formally thank you on the air to introducing both me and my listening audience to the vaudeville team of Sonari Glinton and Zoe Chase.
And you know something, I wish you could, sometimes I just feel like my medium, radio, is terrible, because you can't picture them. They're two of the cutest people on the planet. Zoe is like this fly little, cute white lesbian from New York City, and Sonari is this incredibly handsome Nigerian-American, half African-American, half Nigerian-American, beautiful, broad-shouldered guy who's like, loves Frank Sinatra more than anything, and like, they should be a... They're too cute for television. Like,
oh, yeah.
Television doesn't even deserve them. Like, I don't know what medium deserves how cute they are.
No, they were picking out theme music and everything. It was quite amazing. Quite amazing. So I'm excited for who you're recommending next for our next gay NPR celebrity here. Yeah, think about that. All right, well, we have so many stories to talk about, which is very exciting. Now, but let me preface this by saying, I remember last year trying to put together of Netta Ulaby's top 5 gay stories of 2013 and struggling with like maybe number 5. This year, as I went back over your 2014 stories, let me know if you have this sense or if you disagree. I feel like you had a very gay year on the radio this year.
That was for you.
Talk about resume builders. I'm all about it.
Every story.
Do you not have that sense? It was a lot of gay stories this year.
It was kind of, I would say, I don't know if you would disagree, that some of the highlights of this past year, in a year filled with tragic and terrible lowlights, there was a lot of good gay stuff happening.
Yeah, a lot of good gay stuff. Well, let's go through some of it. And some of it's gay and some of it is just interesting to me. And it's my show, so I get to just, do whatever I want. You have a piece on Tell Everyone What, because I had never heard this word, Netta Ulaby, going for the surprising. What is a sapiosexual?
Yes, I know it. Okay, so there's this great woman I work with, a producer named Evie Stone, who I shout out to regularly. Evie is like the gender expert of NPR. she's younger than me. She's in her 30s, and she's like an entire women's studies department in
nice.
One woman. And Evie will just like throw me these I say bones, but that sounds so non-gender. That sounds like wrong gender. She throws me these lovely female-shaped things.
Nice.
<So often. laughs> and that was Evie. She gave me a heads up to that story. I had no idea, and she was like, "You should do something about this." Boom. Like, and so the point of the story, right, is that OkCupid, which is a major, major dating site.
Oh, yeah.
Although your audience probably doesn't know that. They've never heard of OkCupid.
No, of course not. Yeah, neither has this host. Yeah, of course.
It's an online dating site. And they are adding all of these categories by which people could identify themselves. So you can say, so people had been using OkCupid if they happened to be transgender or if they were asexual, or if they were sapiosexual, which means someone who's attracted to smart people. And they would put that in their written description, but they couldn't check a box that said that. So OkCupid has added 30 or so categories like that, and they're actually following Facebook's example, which added like 50 such categories.
Yeah.
And how cool that these mainstream sites are giving people options.
So cool.
And when I talked to the people at OkCupid, they were like, "We have been wanting to do this for years, but we stupidly set up the entire architecture of our site for men meeting women. And it was mostly about men meeting women because that's most of the people." And they were like, "So we just had to do a lot of basically, I may be using exactly the wrong term, backbuilding. They had to sort of rejigger the architecture."
Yeah.
So to include all of these different algorithms, because OkCupid is, of course, famous for its algorithms. So yeah, that was a fun one.
That was a fun one. And I realize that I'm a sapiosexual, and I'm trying to, you know, incorporate that into my identity.
Oh, are you?
That's fun.
You know what? I think I am, too.
Yeah. I think you are, too. Just put that out there. Okay, so there's that piece. Let me throw out there that one of your pieces shamed me and reminded me that I've never seen Gone with the Wind.
That was something else I was doing. I was like, Ken. I wonder if Ken has seen Gone with the Wind. I wonder if I could shame Ken. This is really embarrassing, Ken. I'm ashamed right now. I assumed I had seen Gone with the Wind. But I watched it for this piece, and I realized that I had only seen basically highlights of it, like the parts that everyone has seen. And I went into this piece thinking, Gone with the Wind, what a dumb movie.
Right.
I've seen it a million times, and it's just outdated. And there is a lot that's outdated in the movie. But the thing is, I watched the movie, and I was absolutely riveted.
It's like such a commitment, though, isn't it? Isn't it like 6 hours?
Well, says Boyhood.
That's true.
I was dreading sitting down and watching it, and I was utterly, you gotta watch it.
Okay.
There's a lot that's problematic about it, but it is, you know, and I talked to one of my favorite critics, Wesley Morris, who's an African-American film critic, and I was really expecting to be like, yeah, this movie is so outdated. Wesley was like, "It's a great movie. It is an indisputably awesome movie." And I was like, "What, Wesley Morris?" And then I watch it, and I was like, "Oh, my God, that's why he's a professional film critic."
I'm going to watch it. I am totally going to watch it now. I'm going to watch it.
Enjoy it. You're going to enjoy it.
Okay. I need something good. By the way, I will tell you, I saw a movie last night. It devastated me, so I need something to take my mind off now. I saw The Theory of Everything last night.
Oh, really? You know, the reviews of that were a little weak.
It ripped me to shreds. So I'm putting that out there. People should go see it. And I saw Wild the other.
The trailer ripped me to shreds. And Eddie Redmayne, oh my God. I think he's a sapiosexual.
I hope he's a schneckosexual because he's just so dreamy. I can't even. Like, yeah. And I don't even use that phrase. No, he's dreamy. So there's that. Everyone should go see that.
You really have established your sapiosexual bona fides when you sort of talk about. We can start talking about Stephen Hawking, and things could get really inappropriate. Really.
I'm going to move on to the next one. So you reviewed a place. So this is the fun piece about looking at some of the content that you put out there over the years. So you reviewed or you spoke to a playwright of the play Straight White Men, right?
Yeah.
So the piece was riveting because, you know, you're Netta Ulaby and all your pieces are riveting. But all the drama, as it sometimes happens, was going down in the comments section.
I don't really read the comments.
Well, this is my question, because you've told me that previously, that you do not read the comments section, but do you find out, as it did for this piece, when the comments section gets shut down?
I did notice that. I went back to that page for some reason. I think I was just checking to make sure that some spelling was right or something, and I saw that. And, you know, in the comment, the people who run the comment section at NPR, they're basically wearing flak jackets. You know, they have the social graces of Miss Manners plus Letitia Baldridge. You know, they just handle the world's biggest jerks, basically, who aren't just, don't just submit. Like, comment section people I'm speaking to someone who doesn't really read the comments. They're either just really great people who really have something to say about whatever they've just heard or read, and again, this isn't just NPR, this is anything, but they get drowned out by a sea of mean-spirited shut-ins who often they'll just, like, see the headline, and then they'll, you know, it will inflame whatever issue that they have, and they will go on, and they'll just go off. And it's not constructive. It's not useful. And, I mean, reading the comments, you just oftentimes just see people going on and being really abusive about something that doesn't even reflect the actual piece.
Oh, by the way, the comments had nothing to do with your piece.
What's that internet rule where it's like, it's how many comments it takes before people start calling each other Nazis? I should look at it.
But is there a stereotype? Because that's the – so say it's 5 comments, right? You kind of expect it's – and in the NPR comments section, it's 5 comments plus maybe another 4, but I guess that's a stereotype because it will happen in any comments section on any site.
Yeah. You know, I feel really lucky, actually, that I started working at NPR before the internet or before the internet had evolved to a point where we had comment sections, because I used to read the listener mail. And, you know, when people would just sit down and write a letter, it's amazing how thoughtful, you know, and there's like that split second of I'm like holding a pen and holding it over a piece of paper. You can just sort of like organize your thoughts a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas there's something about the keyboard experience that lends itself to maybe not organizing your thoughts quite as much. And I think anyone who's a writer knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I find myself wanting to be your advocate sometimes, not that you need me, but you did a piece on Laverne Cox, which was, of course, fascinating, and I'm just so intrigued by Laverne Cox.
Don't read the comments. Don't read the comments.
I did, and the first, like, 12 comments, now, I don't know who this is.
The first 12 are usually good.
Yeah, right? No, that was not the case here. I don't know who Linda Holmes is. I assume you know who Linda Holmes is?
Yes.
Poor Linda Holmes, and please, next time you see Linda Holmes, please give her a pat on the back from Ken Schneck. She had to defend the title of the piece, and folks weren't even writing about the piece. It was just about the title, and I was fascinated by that.
Linda Holmes, let me just plug Linda Holmes for a second. She does NPR's pop culture blog. She should not be wasting her time.
That's what I thought.
Internet commentators on my stories. She should be just like flying free with the rainbows and the unicorns, like in an internet. She has done more to bring NPR into another platform, preserving the voice of NPR on air. She's so great. Like, she has a website, NPR Monkey C, not a website, it's her blog. You should interview her for this. She's not gay, but she's just like, she's incredible.
We're doing it. I'm going to give her one of the quotes of the week, because someone was annoyed about the title, and then Linda said, yeah, I did the title, and then this person wrote back and said, well, did you see the number of upvotes I had? And this is the quote from Linda Holmes. It's so great. Quote, I don't count upvotes for myself or anyone else. That way, comma, madness lies.
That's Linda Holmes in a nutshell. She's one of the hosts of the NPR podcast Happy Hour. Or Pop Culture Happy Hour. You got to talk to her. You'll love her. She's so funny.
We're doing it. All right, well, we have a few more stories to highlight. Again, folks, we are here with NPR's Netta Ulaby. Now, you had teased this at the beginning of 2014, and then I listened to it. You know that I'm obsessed with Supernatural, right?
Yeah. Because every story I do, Ken.
My gosh, between Netta and Carl Castle, how do you guys focus on other things other than me? It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's a joy. That's all I can say.
I bet. What did you learn about Supernatural that you take with you?
Well, besides the fact that I will never be the super fan that Ken is, or that Essie Hinton is, that was a surprise in that one, right? That the author of The Outsiders, Essie Hinton, is a super fan of Supernatural.
Yeah.
And she actually anonymously writes fan fiction about Supernatural.
Come on. It's so great. I love that show so much, and I don't know what it is, and so I listen to the piece.
You don't?
And, well, now I do, because I listened to your piece, and also because I knew before.
I can admit you didn't know before. Anyway, yeah, so that piece was really just about, I might need you to remind me, it's about the fan fiction.
Yeah.
And about how, oh, I remember, it was about how the interplay, really, between the people who write the show Supernatural and their super fans, who have really helped make that show this incredible phenomenon, the show that, like, actually doesn't have particularly good ratings, but yet its stars are like some of the most blogged about, the most Instagrammed, the most Pinterested people in the world, you know, the most Twittered about. The level of fandom that this show has completely compensates for everything else. And it really kind of is like, this is the future of the medium.
Oh, yeah.
The medium formerly known as television.
Yeah. No, it's crazy that it's usually, as you said in the piece, usually written by women that imagines this homoerotic relationship between these two brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was working for the Windy City Times, which was the gay newspaper in Chicago, back in the – this is – I'm still so impressed with this guy. Back in, like, 1998, maybe 99, and one of my writers, Tony Peregrin, said to me, "Have you ever heard of slash fiction?" And I was like, "No." And when he told me, I thought he was making it up. And so what slash fiction is, in case your listeners don't know, is it's an imagined relationship between characters, you know, pre-existing characters.
Yeah.
And so, like, and it started with Kirk slash Spock and all of these straight women writing these relationships between Kirk and Spock. And it has kind of exploded, and it's brought with it a bunch of really interesting attendant issues in this age of hyper-copyright vigilance. So if you own the copyright to Star Trek, are you going to get mad that a bunch of fans are, like, taking these characters and making them screw each other? You know, like, maybe you will, or maybe you'll be like, oh, you know what, this is actually really smart. And how much of this is fair use? I mean, I've done other pieces about that in the past, but it's not a small thing. That's the thing. Like, people are like, oh, this must be some, like, tiny little marginal thing. No, it is huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And keeping the show going. And the show, I have to tell you, folks, if you have not seen Supernatural, it's so enjoyable. There's so many meta things happening that, of course, it's just so rich in content for straight women to write about a homoerotic relationship between two brothers. Very enjoyable stuff.
Ken, have you ever written slash fiction?
That's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that...
What else do you like? Besides Supernatural, what are your other big fandoms?
My big fandoms? Parenthood, very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still one of those people watching Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, when I was in Chicago last week, I am actively looking around for the doctors on ER because I'm still convinced that that is a documentary and those are real people and they know my soul.
Ken, one time I was, when I was a poor grad student, I volunteered for, like, you know, one of those experimental test sort of things and at Cook County Hospital.
Oh, my God.
It was like $100. And they injected me with this experimental drug, and I went into anaphylactic shock.
Oh, my God.
This was during the glory days of ER, like, the biggest, and they actually filmed a bunch of scenes at Cook County Hospital. And I passed out. And it was the worst experience ever. I mean, I don't know if you've ever experienced anaphylactic shock, but what happened to me was, first it felt like my lungs were just hurting, and then it felt like they had somehow been salted, then it felt like they'd been salted and set on fire, and then I passed out, and then I came to in an emergency room, which was luckily just downstairs, in an absolutely deserted emergency room, and I
closed
my eyes, and I was all by myself in this emergency room, and my first thought was, I'm dead. And then I heard the heart monitor going, and it was steady. It was beep, beep, beep. I just looked around and I couldn't understand what was happening. Why was I by myself in this emergency room in Cook County Hospital? And then suddenly this gaggle of nurses like all come running in and they're shrieking because George Clooney was filming in the hallway outside the room where I had been.
I would love to prioritize your health in that situation, but Doug Ross, the pediatrician, kind of a rebel, but with a heart of gold.
I don't blame them myself.
Amazing. Amazing stuff. I want to highlight one more story because this was, I have to tell you, just so well done because you're Netta Ulaby and you do well done things. Tell everyone if they don't know, I don't know how they wouldn't. She's perhaps a little bit taller than you. Tell everyone about Brittany Griner.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Laverne Cox. Brittany Griner was that was such a fun story. So Brittany Griner is like, she's like the savior of the WNBA. And by savior, I don't mean that they suck or that, you know, they're amazing and they try, but they don't have like super big stars except for Brittany Griner. And Brittany Griner is like, she's so tall. She's taller than like 99% of the U.S. population. She's so good that Mark Cuban wanted to recruit her to play on his men's professional basketball team that he owns.
6'8".
She's 6'8". And she's, like, so ridiculously beautiful.
Yeah.
That, and so butch that Nike was like, hey, Brittany Griner, we would like you to be a model for us for our menswear line.
Look at that.
So, and I mean, like, yeah. I mean, Brittany Griner is amazing. So she wrote a memoir. She sort of wrote a memoir with the help of somebody because she's 22 years old and she might be a little, she's in her 20s. And she's openly gay and has been for a really long time. And the poor thing, you know, she's like a kid from like Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And she gets recruited by Baylor and she has no idea that Baylor specifically has anti-gay. You're not allowed to be gay.
No.
Basically at Baylor.
No.
And so that becomes, as you can imagine, a source of tension when she comes out. And she's so popular, like, she's a women's basketball player. She's so popular that at Baylor, the entire school comes to see her, like, every game. Like, there's so much pride in her. So she has been just an incredibly wonderful spokeswoman for gay rights in a really antagonistic environment. And she's been a wonderful spokeswoman. Yeah, representative and advocate for women's sports.
Oh, it's a great piece.
I only wish, and you're going to be shocked to hear this, I only wish that I had interviewed Brittany Griner in person.
Yeah. A little taller than you, not much.
A little taller. You know someone else you should talk to?
Tell me.
Mallory Ortberg.
Okay.
Do you know, she wrote a lesbian response. She didn't know me yet, but I've since interviewed her for this book she wrote called Texts from Jane Eyre. But Evie, the women's studies superpower who I mentioned earlier, sent me a response that Mallory Ortberg wrote to my Mallory Griner interview, and it's a little dirty, and it's really funny.
I'm going to go look it up. I'm going to go look her up. See, this is why I count on you. You point me in so many fun directions.
I have nothing without you or without Evie.
What do you got coming up that you're excited about, that you can tell us about? You're usually pretty tight-lipped, so I don't count on a lot of info here.
I think I'm the opposite of tight-lipped.
Oh, no, when you're about upcoming projects? No, you are not, my friend.
Well, I just don't want to disappoint anyone. Particularly Ken, the person to whom all of my pieces are. I have a piece about, so look, this is how I basically got my job. I got my job by thinking, okay, what needs to get done and how can I do that so people don't have to worry about it? It's Christmas time. When is this going to air? This is going to air on Christmas, right?
Yeah.
So every year for 14 years, I've been like, okay, what's the Christmas piece? Because every year NPR's like, oh, we need a Christmas piece on New Year's Eve and on on Christmas Eve and on Christmas Day and on Christmas Eve Day and on Christmas night and like the week before Christmas. And there's never enough Christmas pieces. So I always do Christmas pieces. And the piece I did this year was about this guy in Baltimore who's friends with John Waters who does an annual show and has for 30 years called A Very Crabby Christmas.
Fun.
A Crabs for Christmas. I saw John Waters last night, by the way, and doing his Christmas show, and one of his lines was, everybody shaves now. Where did the crabs go? horrible. So this guy does a show called Crabs for Christmas. But unlike John Waters, he's talking about the crustacean variety. And because that is a Baltimore tradition, is crabs. And it, you know, it's like crawfish in Louisiana. But he's very aware of the double entendre. And he does this cabaret show, this like hilarious Baltimore-themed cabaret show about crabs for Christmas. So I have a little Christmas piece about that that's airing tomorrow.
I love that that's your way of saying Merry Christmas to your listening audience.
Well, that and talking to you.
There you go.
Old mistletoe. Old.
I have to tell you, and surely you know this at this point because I tell you every year, but and I'm not going to do the long flowery thing because I know I can wax on poetic. You know that you inspire me, right?
Moving along. So and thank you, by the way. Thank you. I appreciate that. So another piece I'm working on. There's a total dead zone on our air between Christmas and New Year's.
Okay.
People are on vacation. I mean, like, that's the bottom line. There's a lot of people away. And there's just not a lot of news in terms of, like, lawmakers making decisions and things like that. So that space belongs to the arts.
It's your time.
It is our wow. We just, like, rolling in it. We're just like, give it art. And one of the things we do with it is we take it as a total excuse to just go back and revisit things we were too busy to get to during the course of the year. So I am doing a super fun piece about this rocker named Mary Timoney. Do you know who she is?
I don't think I do, no.
Yeah, she was a very influential female rocker in the 1990s who played with like bands that weren't like huge but were influential. And then she was part of Wild Flag, which you might know because they were the punk rock girl supergroup with like Slater Kinney.
Oh yes, yes, of course, yeah. Of course.
So she played with them, and then when they broke up and Slater Kinney got back together, she has started her own band, which is also all female punk rock, an amazing band called X-Hex, and they came out with an incredibly well reviewed album earlier this year. And I'm doing a piece about them, and it is such a pleasure to be working on. Really cool.
We have so much to look forward to, as always. You know, Netta, you come here on this show every year. This is number six year in a row, dating back all the way. We apparently took a break in 2009. I don't know what kind of fight we got into, but we took that year off. But other than that,
I think it was because I hit on your engineer.
You totally did.
Come on. The mistletoe was up. It wasn't moldy yet. Married yet?
Yes, Ken, you're so interesting. But back to Jody. Yeah, okay, Netta. Jody, that's so interesting. You do educational theater. Netta, have you seen the logo? It's my name on the logo.
Where is Jody?
Jody, shout out to Jody. Jody just finished her master's degree last week.
Jody.
In mission-driven organizations, because that's a master's that you can get, which I love. I would love to have a master's in mission-driven organizations.
Well, tell her hi for me.
I will tell her hi from you. I'll bring her back on the 2015 Netta Ulibi, This Is Your Life.
The one that's all of my...
It's on. It's on. And on that note, our best to Robin. A treat having you on the show, as always. So excited for more content from you. Netta Ulibi, always putting content out there that surprises you and apparently always inspired by me. Netta, a treat as always.
Thank you. Some found the letter you wrote me on the radio, and they told the world just how you felt. It must have fallen out of a hole in your brown overcoat. They never said your name, but I knew just who they meant. Whoa.
right, folks, and we are back. I'm Ken.
And I'm Becca.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Ken.
You haven't been on in so long. It's actually been a really long time.
I've missed you.
I think it's been since before Thanksgiving.
Oh, my gosh, really?
I know.
It's good to be back.
And I keep promising this new microphone, but I couldn't get it to work. Not sure if you saw me trying.
I learned new swear words when you try to get that to work.
I really did want to get it to work. And it didn't help that you were singing that song that did not imply any consent.
I can't stay.
No consent in that song.
None at all.
Nobody likes that one. It's so fun. Hey, so much has changed since you've last been on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, things are good. We've got another co-host with us here today.
There is another co-host here in the attic of Fir Avenue. Ryder, come here.
Hey, Ryder.
Okay, not so much. But Ryder's here, and he's the new dog gay mascot. He is indeed gay. We confirmed that with a test. Is that not true?
Confirmed it with a test. Going to try to fix it with religion. Just kidding.
This week's episode brought to you by Safe Room Cleveland. Check it out for all your catering needs. So it is the holiday season. What are your plans for a very gay Christmas?
I'm heading to my parents' house.
Okay.
We don't travel. We don't do anything crazy. We sit in jammies and we drink wine and we
nice.
We eat. It's good. It's
sounds
relaxing.
Gay to me.
Yeah.
What are you hoping Santa brings you? A baby.
I do not want a baby.
And Mary got one.
She sure did. She didn't ask for it.
So there you go. Why are we even checking? What would you like Santa to bring you?
Nothing really from me. Now it's all about the dog. And I believe I showed you. I don't want him to hear me say this, but I did buy him a bow tie.
Yes.
And it's going to look really nice.
We are going
to wait till tomorrow to open it.
We are going to put a picture of Ryder in the bow tie on this show is SoGay.com. Maybe not on this show, SoGay.com, but certainly on the Facebook page.
Yeah. He would love that.
Well, we have so much to talk about. A little shout out to, me. There's a new Huffington Post piece up and people are angry. So that's always fun. So go check that out and yell at me like all the other professors across the country are doing. And I'm fine with that. So I told people at the start of the show that I would talk a little bit about Chicago. And there's some stuff that you don't even know about Chicago. So I spent last week in Chicago with a group of 10 students. We volunteered for a week, and it was supposed to be just kind of volunteering around mental health issues, but it turned out to be really, really gay. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about the really, really
yeah.
gay.
Yeah.
So we volunteered for a day and a half with the Transgender Oral History Project.
Which sounded incredible.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. And Andre Perez, the executive director of the Transgender Oral History Project, former student of mine, he was on the show maybe 5-6 months ago, which was super fun. So we sat with the students, 10 students, and someone had donated hundreds and hundreds of underground transgender magazines from like the 60s to the 90s.
Unbelievable.
Right? And so our whole task was to use archiving standards and go through magazines and enter them so that other people could access them mm-hmm. online. So we did that for maybe, let's say we did a full day and a half day. So let's say 14, 15 hours.
Yeah.
Let's just say 14, 15 hours. Uh-huh. For maybe 20 minutes of that, Andre and his roommate Sandy just talked to us a little bit about their lives living openly as trans folks. The next day when the students did the reflection, what did they say was the most impactful of their time? Hours and hours of looking through magazines, 20 minutes maybe of people talking about their lives. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at like some hardcore just historical, how trans people lived in the 60s and the 90s and all these different years. And at the end of the day, what did the students reflect on most?
You tell me.
Those 20 minutes that they heard about people's lives.
Amazing.
And but isn't that like the whole thing?
That is what it's all about. I would imagine that's why that Transgender Oral History Project is in place to begin with.
Yeah.
Is to kind of illuminate that. So good for those kids.
And that's like that whole message. I mean, everyone says, what changes lives the most, what changes minds the most is when people are out and open about their lives. Because mm-hmm. it's difficult to be anti-trans if you're like, but that's Andre. That's my trans mm-hmm. friend who told me his story.
Right.
So, I don't know. It kind of makes the case for people coming out if you are able to do so. Not so much at the Christmas table. I don't think that's a good time to do it.
Well, it would make for a memorable Christmas.
Wouldn't it?
But maybe, go out and check out this project out in Chicago because it right. sounds unbelievable.
Or you could go online. Accessible. You could go online. Transgender Oral History Project.
Wonderful.
So you and I went to a comedy show the other night. I'm springing some stuff on you that I didn't tell you we were going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
You
okay.
and I went to a comedy show the other night.
Uh-huh.
Tell everyone about the comedy show we went to.
It was a benefit for the Cleveland Food Bank. So it was sketch comedy. It wasn't stand-up per se, but it was a group of guys here in Cleveland who do sketch comedy, and they did a very, I guess you could say, like Christmas themed, performances and
super cute.
Yeah, it was fun.
Talk to me about the opening act.
Ryan Dalton.
Oh, you even remembered his name. I wasn't even going to give a shout out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's done quite a bit around Cleveland.
Okay.
I don't remember the material so much.
I do. And so let's talk about it.
Okay. Let's hear it.
There were definitely some jokes that were like, oh, come on, guy.
What did he say?
He was talking about how, yes, gay marriage has come a long way and gay rights have come a long way, but it's still going to crack him the hell up. And he used more foul language when he hears a gay guy walking down the street in a high-pitched voice.
Mm.
Do you not remember this whole bit?
I do now, yeah. I guess I do now.
See,
the focus
for
me was on the main acts, I guess, so it must have breezed over.
I think this is where I am too hypersensitive. Mm. Because I sat there and I actually thought he was really funny at the start and he was interacting with your mom a little.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, all the performers do at various different performances that I've seen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of the baselines for comedy shows here in Cleveland. They interact with your mom. I've seen that more than once at, like, various different shows. Which
and
is,
she eats it up.
She loves it.
Yeah.
She loves it. And she demurs a little bit. Like, no.
Yeah.
No, but she loves it. She's a staple here in Cleveland. But I was immediately, so I thought he was funny interacting with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did the gay material. And I was like, screw you. Mm-hmm. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
But I think most people didn't walk away thinking that.
Yeah. No, I can certainly understand where the sensitivity would come from. It
I'm
reminds
gay.
Me a little bit. You are?
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
No, it reminds me a little bit about a bit that Louis C.K. does.
Okay.
And I love and respect Louis C.K. and his comedy very much. And I'm not saying that this is where Ryan's head was when he put this joke together. I have absolutely no idea. But this just, it reminds me of this. Louis C.K. has a bit where he talks about if he sees somebody, anybody, walking down the street in like a crazy outfit, acting really silly, he's going to laugh because it's silly, not because
right.
they're gay or because they're, you know, this or that, but just because they're acting silly and it's,
yeah.
and it's funny and they're over the top and it's not from coming from a hateful place. And that's kind of the gist of his bit. So I don't know if that's where Ryan was coming from and just didn't deliver well.
I was done. And then he had this whole bit after that about kind of just about like, it would only take 8 women talking at a gay guy at the same time for his masculinity to come out.
Mm.
I was just over it.
Yeah, understandable.
But I think the interesting piece for me is that I thought he was really funny up until that point,
mm-hmm.
and then I refused to believe he was funny again after that. And I
yeah.
think that means I'm hypersensitive.
I can't comment on it. I don't think you're hypersensitive.
Yeah.
I think if you have thoughts on something and it offends you, it's okay to feel like that and talk about it.
Your back didn't go up. Your hackles didn't go up when he did that whole, like, 3 minutes just on how bakers are not good people.
You know, it ruffled some feathers, let
yeah.
me tell you.
Yeah.
Let me tell you,
yeah.
yeah.
That whole, like, save room for Nazis, like, that was, like, a
yeah.
whole thing.
Too much, buddy.
I thought that was
too
directed.
Much.
When he pointed at you,
it
I thought that was a little,
much.
He's like, isn't and
direct.
Isn't that your mom? I just thought it was
direct, yeah.
a little bit too direct. Well, there is some LGBT news out there that we want to throw out at
mm-hmm.
folks. I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, my show if we didn't talk about blood donation. Did you see the blood donation update yesterday?
I didn't see it yesterday, no.
So the FDA is now saying that they will allow gay men to donate blood. Yay!
Awesome.
If they haven't had sex for a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, how do you prove that?
Right.
I mean, truthfully, how do you prove that?
Right.
And second of all, what?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the deal. FDA saying gay men okay. can give blood if they don't have sex for a year. And by the way, if you want to be one of those do-gooder altruistic people who wants to habitually donate blood,
mm-hmm.
that means you are taking on a life of celibacy.
Correct. Or you're just being, you know, you stretch the truth in fibs.
See, and that part I don't endorse. So
I don't
going,
endorse it either, but I'm
I know
it's
you don't.
Happen.
So going with the idea that someone is not going to lie, that their altruism is also consistent with being honest before they get their sugar cookie or donate blood and they get their sugar cookie, they have to take on a life of celibacy mm-hmm. in order to regularly donate blood.
Absolutely.
Do you know your blood type, by the way? Becca!
I don't.
You have to know your blood type. When
I
you
shouldn't.
Go to your parents tonight, you should ask.
They probably don't know either. I can't give blood. So
why can't you give blood? I didn't know that.
I have small wiggly veins. They've asked me to stop trying. I pass out.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's awful. I tried so many
times. You have SWV?
It's really serious chronic condition. They get in there with the needle. I'm not going to get too graphic. I don't want to make anyone squirm, but they get in there and they can't find the vein. They can't.
Really?
It just wiggles out of the way of the needle. And I pass out every time because it's not a fun sensation.
I think that's tapeworm. I don't know that that's like a thing.
It is. And they've asked me, last time I went, they said, maybe next time you could just pass out stickers. And I it was so condescending and disappointing. I wanted to, but I just can't anymore. So
They've asked me that, too. They've asked me to pass out stickers so long as I wear gloves. That's kind of how I feel about the FDA. So that's what the FDA is saying. And Senator Elizabeth Warren has tweeted out about it. She took to Twitter this week to criticize the FDA's proposed new policy on blood donation, saying that while the recommendation is a step forward, it is discriminatory. Her tweet said, quote, the FDA must commit to building a bigger, safer blood supply through risk-based screening and have courage to set policies based on science. Good for you, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
We like that, Elizabeth Warren. She's a good one. She's a good one. Hey, there is a new show coming to TLC. Have you heard about this?
Oh, this makes, I just can't, Ken. TLC, the learning channel.
I used to love TLC.
Yeah, when you actually learned things.
I learned never go on a TV show and trade spaces with your neighbors.
I love trading spaces.
I loved it. I got to reach out to Paige Davis. I would kill to have Paige Davis on my show.
Yeah, she's adorable.
I love her.
Is she
I love
gay?
Her. She's not gay. I don't care. I make exceptions for certain people.
Understand.
Yeah, no,
I
love Paige Davis. I wanted to be on Trading Spaces. I was obsessed. And she went away for a year, and then they had her back, and I was like, it was perfect.
Yeah.
So the latest TLC special is called My Husband's Not Gay.
I don't even know where to begin with this.
For those of you who have not heard about it, it airs on January 11th. It follows the lives of three married Mormon couples, all living in Salt Lake City, Utah. Each of the men openly discusses their attraction to men, but they refuse to identify as gay. Tom, the sole bachelor of the group, says, quote, I like to say I've chosen an alternative to an alternative lifestyle. As devout members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, these men believe that a heterosexual lifestyle is the only acceptable one and therefore have married or want to marry women. Rather than try to eradicate their sexual desires, they simply ignore them. In an odd contradiction, for these men, being attracted to other men is inevitable, but being straight is a choice. No, we're not watching that together. We should have a party, January 11th.
Watching party.
Watching party. Oh, I think January 11th is the Nate. No, it's not. I was going to say it's the next Keep Talking, but it's not.
That's all not right. When Tig Notaro is going to be in town, is it?
No, that's February.
Oh, February. That's right. That's right.
February 20th. 11th. Something like that. That's my birthday that you just said.
Oh.
What did you just say?
The 20th?
That's my birthday.
I don't think that's when she's going to be here.
No.
Anyway.
I'd rather you retain my birthday than when she's going to be here, but let's do both. Let's do both. So this is a story that I know that you were aware of because we talked about it a little bit. Look at that picture.
Such a beautiful child.
So Brad and Angelina, who I haven't spoken to in...
We've really lost touch
with
them.
It was somewhere around when we got the Vitamix.
They didn't come to that party.
They did not come to that. They might have. We wouldn't have known. There were so many people at that housewarming party. So a lot of the articles, I love this one. This is In Touch magazine, and the article goes, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt definitely go down as two of the coolest parents in our book. In 2008, the 51-year-old father told Oprah Winfrey his now 8-year-old Shiloh preferred the name John. And earlier this month, the couple supported their child's decision to wear a suit at the L.A. premiere of Angelina's film Unbroken. Now, it's a lot of controversy around this.
Yeah. I can understand why people might – I can understand why people who are not familiar with, you know, gender identity would be raising eyebrows over this.
Yeah.
But – it is so, our culture is so geared, from the second you're born, things are either pink or they're blue. You're
right.
Either given dolls or you're given trucks.
Right.
So it's this thing that's just like, it's ingrained, this gender identity is ingrained into you from the get-go.
Yeah.
And I think it's amazing that they are open enough and accepting enough to say, you be who you are and you tell us how you want to live your life. And an 8-year-old child has free will. They have an identity. They have a sense of self. So let them express it how they want to. I think it's wonderful.
But they're probably more in a position to protect their child. I don't know. I go back and forth on this. I guess in some ways they're not because it's such fame and such a spotlight. But they certainly have the power and the wealth to protect their child more than say, some people who live across the street, say, from us could.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of goes back to that question. I talk about this with my students with some frequency, particularly when Halloween comes up and we're talking about gender identity and gender expression. More specifically, would you let your 8-year-old son trick or treat in a princess costume?
I think it's an incredibly difficult decision for a parent because you want to protect and you don't want your child to be degraded, spoken badly to. And as someone who's not a parent, that's hard for me to weigh in. But
Christmas is not over yet, so we'll say yes, go ahead.
You know, I'm just such a supporter for ingraining in your child the ability to look farther than someone who's, you know, insulting you, look farther than people who don't accept you, and really embrace who you are.
Yeah.
Probably a lot easier said than done.
Yeah. It's so funny. I mean, obviously, I don't know if you know, I have this radio show called The Show Is So Gay. I'm such a fan of peeping.
Holy smokes,
I know, right? It's like, what are we doing in the attic? No, I'm actually recording this, and it's going to air to apparently 45,000 people a week. So no, this is a real thing. This isn't just you and I chatting while the pie bakes and the animals run around for everyone to hear. But I'm all for people being able to express their gender identity and gender expression in whatever way they want. But on the other hand, I am someone who was bullied, and I want to protect anyone from that. And I certainly don't feel like we as a society right now have the solution to protect people from bullying. And so because of that, I have this defense mechanism that I go right into of thinking, I don't want anyone to do anything that's going to get them bullied.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that they don't advocate for people coming out in any sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression. But sometimes I kind of feel like, don't come out until it's safe.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough. It's tough. But when does the cultural shift happen if nobody, you know, takes the brave step forward? It's truly, I think it's the only way that a cultural shift and true acceptance will really happen.
I would not have been brave enough to be that person. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, it's a tough subject.
With hindsight, I wish I could have been out in high school.
Sure, I'm sure.
If I was going to get all the crap anyway, I might as well reap the benefits of hopefully getting into Columbia because I went to the prom. I have this whole narrative that I've spun in my head of what would have happened if I came out. So there's that. So I drove through Indiana last week my way to Chicago. There is an Indiana story for everybody. And I highlight this because this stuff is still going on. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a lawsuit because you have to file a lawsuit against a Western Indiana school district seeking to force it to recognize a club for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students and those who support them. The lawsuit was filed this week in U.S. District Court in Indiana. It contends that the North Putnam Community School Corporation in Bainbridge, 35 miles west of Indianapolis, is violating the First Amendment rights of the Gay Straight Alliance and the three students who are now members. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of those students at North Putnam High School. The three students are a senior, a junior, and a first year. Acting school superintendent Terry Tippin said this week he's aware of the lawsuit, but he said he has no comment. The school board voted on November 20th on whether to recognize the club and split evenly with one member abstaining. By the way, what are you abstaining in that vote for? Come on. The effect was the club wasn't approved. Because the club hasn't been recognized by the school board, the lawsuit says, its members aren't allowed to meet at the school, promote its activities on school grounds, or associate with the school in any way.
Unbelievable.
Right? 2014, almost 2015, Ken Falk, the ACLU of Indiana legal director, said there's no reason for the school board to reject the club when it allows other clubs not sponsored by the school to meet at the high school. The lawsuit contends that students who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, or are perceived as such, have frequently been harassed and bullied at North Putnam High School. It says the students seeking approval for the club believe that having a formal club that would meet during school non-instructional time would be extremely beneficial to these students, as well as to the student body as a whole. The lawsuit also says the club's ability to function is greatly diminished because the students are not able to meet at the same time that other clubs meet or advertise at the school.
Yeah.
2014.
Unreal.
By the way, the whole article actually kind of annoys me in that I can't believe how much justification we need. It's a student club.
Yeah.
They should be able to propose it. They're doing no harm.
None.
Shouldn't even really have to justify how much good it's doing.
None.
Though it is quite undeniable that it's doing, it would do good, as all of the gay straight alliances in all the land do.
I wonder if they, and I'm not saying that they should have to do this, but I wonder if they were like, okay, we won't have, you know, a gay, bi, trans club, we'll have a diversity club.
Right.
And if the school would accept that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not that they should have to do it, but it's just like, again, this comes down to normalization. And I know that this is a very utopian idea. I know it's not that simple of a solution, but these kids are getting bullied at school. And the more that this, the more that it's kind of pushed to the side, the more it's weird for kids who don't know about it.
Totally.
Whereas if it was just a normal club at school, they probably wouldn't think twice about it.
I just want to take this opportunity to remind everyone that all of the research done by our great friends over at GLSEN indicates over and over again every single year that schools that have a gay-straight alliance feature LGBT students who are experiencing less harassment.
Yep.
Not a shocker. Now, we will stay tuned to see if this school board does what so many school boards have done before in the face of a lawsuit, or if the lawsuit is successful and they just decide, well, wait, if we have to have a gay-straight alliance, we're going to get rid of all of the clubs. I love when schools do that. It's cute. It's cute.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Really achieve them.
All right. Well, that's it for our holiday episode of This Show Is So Gay. Our huge thanks to Netta Ulaby. I just love her so much, to the point where she might want to go to her local law enforcement agency and file some paperwork, because she's just amazing. Our thanks to Ryder, who made an appearance, whose breath is steaming a little bit as I look at him. I love it. And our thanks to Jack. And, of course, a happy holidays to you, Becca.
It's good to be back.
It's great to be back. We did this all in one take. It was so well done. So well done. You guys get out there. Celebrate the holidays however you celebrate them. Responsibly use your voice to make a difference. Come out at the Christmas table. And while you're doing all those things, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Merry Christmas, you smorgasbord.
Is me.